It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So I want to talk to you about a couple acquaintances of mine that go by the names of Harry and David. You familiar with these gentlemen?
I know several Davids. I don't think I know anyone named Harry or Harold or anything like that.
Or anybody named Harry and David? You know, like a company? Sends out a lot of holiday gifts? You genuinely don't know who Harry and David are?
No.
Oh, wow. We may be experiencing our first major classist issue here. I can't believe this. That's fascinating. Harry and David is a company that sends out a lot of holiday food to things. And one of the common and traditional ones are pears. I think that may have been how the company got started. And so they will send out pears that are really, really good. And people send them around Christmas time and things like that. They also do other versions where they send chocolates or just sort of, you know, hampers of stuff. You know, it's like an upscale Hillshire Farm kind of thing. I can't believe you never heard of it. Wow. Because that's like one of the few things that like my family I was raised in and the family I married into both know about them. So to me, that means that literally all white people know about them. Like,
I don't think I ever heard of them.
Well, then this story won't be nearly as interesting for you. So it's happened for a while, sometimes a specific one, sometimes not, but we basically every year end up with a box of pears, usually from my in-laws. And they are really good pears. They're green. I don't know exactly if they're like a certain variant of a Bartlett pear or something. I don't know, but they're really good. But as with all pears, kind of like avocados, not ripe, perfect and rotten.
Yeah.
And there's like 20 pears in this box. So we throw out a lot of pears, sadly. And we feel bad about it because they're very tasty and we don't like wasting the food, whatever. So this year, I'm on it. This year, we got the box like a day or two before I was going to go shopping. And so I was like, I'm not getting any extra fruit. I'm watching it. Every day I would check them. And once they were ready, you better believe that's all Trish is getting in her lunch until they're gone as a pear. And I make sure I eat at least one a day. And the good news is once they're ripe enough, they only get better. So they are close. They are probably a couple days out, but we've only got like four left. So we kind of nailed it this year. But I had one yesterday and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know why this idea popped in my head. It's just my brilliant creative spirit. Has anybody ever made a peanut butter and pear sandwich? Because it sounds like it would be a good mix, a good pairing.
It does.
I think I've had a peanut butter and apple before. I think that's probably one of the things my mom invented to keep from going crazy when she was feeding me as a toddler. Mom made peanut butter and everything sandwiches, so apple was probably there. So I was like, this could be good. And so today, in fact, shortly before this, I made one and I tried it. In fact, if you had been a little earlier, listeners would have been able to hear me eat it, which I know they love that kind of thing.
Oh, man, I'm sure they do.
A lot of podcast listeners find eating on air gross, but we got some Some people, we got some real chew heads, as I like to call them, in our podcast family. So I'm sorry that you missed out on that. Also, end of the story, wasn't that good.
Really?
It's too subtle a flavor to stand up to the peanut butter.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. I ate it. But, like, I'm like, I'd rather have a peanut butter sandwich and a pear. So, yeah. Maybe, I mean, they do make, like, these are very soft, very sweet, almost melt-in-your-mouth kind of pears. I know they make harder, crunchier ones and stuff like that. Those could work. Is there a Granny Smith version of a pear?
I think pears, and sometimes there are certain juices or flavors that are sometimes used to sweeten or accompany stronger flavors. Because, for example, you can get some 100% juices at the supermarket that aren't just, say, grape juice or just whatever the flavor is. They have other juices mixed in there. And some of those other juices are like white grape juice because it sweetens without flavoring, really. I think pear puree and juice is sometimes used for the same reason.
I think you are right. I think white grape, pear, and actually apple, if you're going
apple sometimes dirt
cheap, are mm-hmm. the main filler juices.
Yeah, filler juices. That's good. I like that. Yeah.
Just the other day, I decided to get one of my rare pops. I was at a Wendy's. I think we were having that for lunch. And I was like, they have that Mellow Yellow Zero Limeade flavor that I really like. And I'm like, I'm going to treat myself to that. And I got it and I'm drinking it and it's real good. I'm driving home and I'm like, my mouth's kind of sticky. That usually doesn't happen when I drink diet soda.
Oh.
And so I got home and I had Trish try it, and she wasn't sure either. She usually twigs to aspartame real fast, but she wasn't sure. So I ended up throwing it away and I was like, I'm annoyed. I understand it's such a little thing and it happens, but every time I'm like, some of us have diabetes and you have no idea how much sugar is in one of those. But then another part of me is like, yeah, those of you who have diabetes maybe shouldn't fucking be going to Wendy's. Maybe next to the Baconator, having the non-diet soda isn't the worst decision you've made at lunch today. So, but still. It reminded me, because it also tastes like that when I eat a pear. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is still hopeful someday they're going to make a Pokemon spinoff where you're going around hunting and eating all of them. It's like regular Pokemon, but you got to eat them all. Which sounds horrible until you remember that the original idea is basically dogfighting. So, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode
613. Lucky 613.
Yep.
And it is not our holiday episode. It is the episode before our holiday episode. Have I got that right?
I mean,
right around here, all the times are bleeding together.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the 15th today. It'll be the 22nd in a week, obviously. So,
yeah. So that one will be it. All right. So no talking about that. Although Hanukkah and Christmas are right into each other. I believe the last night of Hanukkah is Christmas Eve.
Really? I didn't know that.
This year. I mean, I think I heard it on an internet radio station. So, for those of you just joining us, happy holidays. Also, why are you doing this? But welcome you. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. What's that email address? I hear you asking. Don't know how, but I do. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And people, I assume, maybe some are bots, I don't know, write in to that address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com, with whatever they want. And then, hat, being all magical and stuff, sends those emails to us. We read them, talk about them. It sounded more magical in my head, but you get the idea. And that's the show. So how's your week been?
Well, this is the last week of school. So I finished some stuff up early, but as you know, there's always other things that I want to do. Sometimes there's articles I didn't get to read. Sometimes there's something I want to investigate a little bit more than the class covered. So I was able to do some of that stuff, so I won't be doing it during the break.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Even though, as you have always pointed out, even though I like doing those things, it is technically work and I'm not technically taking any time off or doing self-care when I do those things. So I was able to get some of that stuff out of the way, and that was nice.
But no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, I mean, you're welcome, because I once again blew off you and David to have lunch and gave you extra time.
That's true. You gave me extra time. And with really what the extra time bought me, though, was I was able to finish up some of the stuff I was working on with Wisp. I don't know if anyone remembers. I've been working on that.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Most of the lack of progress has been because of school, because I started Wisp either just before or just after school started. So, and I was working on it at the same time as going to school at first. And then that wasn't really working out. So I was only working on Wisp like in that 3 week period between classes. And then a couple of those 3 week periods, I didn't work on it because I was burnt out. I needed to not do anything.
Yeah.
So that's why it's taken so long for it to really get to a place to be finished. But I went through it a couple times, fixed some things, changed some things, and then realized there's nothing else I can really do with this. Not until the format that I'm putting it in the service I'm working with will always get better, you know. And, you know, so 5 years from now, I could have,
there may
it could
be new things.
It could be a completely different thing. But for what the service offers now and for what the format's like now, there's nothing really more I can do with it. And so I realized this is just going to sit here and do nothing. Like if I wait another 10 weeks, and I look at this, there's probably not a thing I'll change. I'm not going to edit anything. I'm not going to add anything unless there's some big update in the next 10 weeks, which there probably won't be. There's no reason for me not to just publish this right now. So that's what I did.
Right.
If people want to look at it, I think the best way to find the link. So it's in chapters. There's 12 of them. And I only linked the first one because I'm pretty sure if you look at the first one, it'll link you to the next ones, which I didn't have to publish all 12 of them. I could have like done it a week or a month at a time or something like that, but I published one. So the best way for you to find it, I think, is if you're on Facebook, there's an Aether Theater Facebook page. You can go there and you can find it. It's the top thing on the links. But I am on Twitter. I've been on Twitter since 2006 or 2005 or something, and my account's still active there, so I tweeted it also at Profozone, Profozone. You can find the link to the first chapter there also. So on at the Aether Theater, Aether Theater on Facebook, you can find a link. It's right at the top, or at my Twitter account at Profozone, you can find a link there.
What about aethertheater.com itself?
I haven't posted anything on my website because I don't have a place for it. So I'm going to have to figure out and maybe make one so you could click a link and go right to it or something.
But put one in the comments on this episode, because what you described are two very easily accessible locations. It's also two pretty well-hated monstrosities that I don't blame anybody from having nothing to do with.
I mean, so that's true.
Just in case, you can just put something in the comments of this episode and it'll be fine. Or even if you're fast enough on the draw, you could email me the link and I can put it in the actual description.
Okay. I'll see if I can remember
that. But you have to be very fast, because I'm very fast.
But I felt like it turned out okay. I thought, I mean, you helped me a lot with the script, which I really appreciate.
And I saw some of the visuals and it looked really interesting done that way. And I think it will suit that format.
I do too.
It's a spooky little fucking story. So
yeah, I felt like the format actually was ideal for it, really. I mean, I didn't really know when they first contacted me and said, hey, we'd like you to put the story out there. I didn't really know anything about it. But when I looked at it, I realized this is, and I hadn't, the story, since I hadn't written it in any, it was really just a synopsis or even a treatment. I hadn't written it in any format yet. So I didn't have a format that I liked better, right? Like, oh, well, this isn't going to, you know, I wrote this as a novel and this won't really fit or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I could really sort of, as I built the story, I could build it in a way that fit the way this whole thing worked. And I liked how it worked. Now it's not perfect and it's early days for this particular site and the technology and everything. I mean, as I was building it,
it's perfect, I'm sure.
There were a lot of things that I wanted to do that aren't available to do yet, but I still felt very good about the finished product. I thought, this is fun. I like this story. I like this format. You know, and maybe down the road, because I can update it even now if I want. Like if someone commented on it and said, hey, you have a typo, or hey, this happened or that happened, I can go in and fix technical things. I mean, I could update it in any way I want, really, but I probably won't do anything to the story because that seems weird. But I would fix technical problems or whatever, and I can do that. So in the future,
subscribe,
I might be able to add
Magical Talking Hat Podcast Platinum to see William update his story live.
But I might be able to add, you know, character details, visual character details that I couldn't do before, or location details that I couldn't do before, or music that I couldn't do before. I might be able to do that, you know, as time goes on. So
epilogue when it was all a dream and Patrick Duffy's in the shower.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. And I hope everyone, you know, takes a look at it. Because I thought it turned out pretty good, but, I'm mostly glad to have it sort of done sort of in the rearview mirror so that when these next 3 weeks comes up, that's one less thing I'm tempted to do rather than just try to just relax, you know,
chill.
But anyway,
enjoy the holiday.
You know, one thing I worked on this week, several quarters I've kind of wanted to delve into and haven't had the time to, because every quarter addresses this issue a little bit, but not very well. So I don't really get a chance to think about too much is the topic of emotions. Emotions are something that in human behavioral science and even in clinical human behavioral science is really a slippery concept and not one that's well defined by very many people. It's clearly not very well understood. And yet, when you're learning to be a clinician, they put a huge amount of emphasis on it, on understanding that how important emotions are in learning different words for emotions, because in our culture anyway, people aren't very good at really, in a general sense. Individual people, of course, can be different, but in a general sense, we're not very good at talking about emotions or even finding the right words to express our emotions. So there's a lot of focus put on that, but there's not a lot of effort, I don't think, put into understanding what an emotion even is, where it comes from.
Well, you know, I think you need to be talking to someone. This is an accessibility issue with you. Like in the same way that if, you know, it was a class where you were reading something, they would need to provide an alternate thing for a blind person to deal with. If emotions are going to be critical, you need whatever interface or technology you normally use to interact with emotions should be available to you in the class and available on all tests.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that might just be covered under the ADA. I'm not sure. But if you're having trouble, get a lawyer.
That's funny. But
you've heard that's funny.
No.
Humans have told you that's funny.
It's not untrue though, right? I mean, emotions, it's not just me. I get what you're saying and that's hilarious, but still, emotions are a complicated thing for people in general. Is that not true?
I agree.
I mean, this is what I'm told anyway.
Or so I have read.
Or so it's been expressed to me. So I really have sort of tried to figure out all of that, because
I personally think it's a gloss over for the fact that none of us really have an easy time defining emotions. And we all want to say, oh yeah, we're really good at this, and this is real important. We're all fucking winging it.
That's what, you know, when I'm taught, when other clinicians are teaching the rest of us how to be good clinicians, there's so much emphasis. I mean, that word emotion and emotions, those words are used a lot. And then it's sort of talked about, you know, empathy is mentioned, and a lot of emphasis is put on having the actual words to, you know, to describe an emotion, especially when you're talking to a client and they're expressing some experience. They're not talking about an emotion, but they're clearly feeling one. And you, as the clinician, you know, to help them feel heard, deeply heard, it's good for you to be able to say, you know, wow, that sounds really depressing, or that sounds really sounds like that really made you angry, or whatever. You know, you're able to use a word that the client can say, yeah, that's exactly how it felt. And so not only are they getting in touch with that emotion in a more conscious and deliberate way, but they're also feeling heard and seen, which builds rapport. And research has shown that building rapport is one of the most important things that you need to do to affect change in your client. So words,
I mean, becomes a big that's deal. Kind of an old fashioned thing. Nowadays, you can hire someone to build rapport for you, contract it out. I've always assumed this was very similar along the lines of the how much pain are you in thing when you go to a physical doctor, in that I don't think we as humans, I'm using the royal we here, have a good handle that if I say, I'm really angry, and you say, I'm really angry, that we have any fucking clue that we're talking about the same feeling.
Well, that's exactly right.
And it's possible that, I mean, this emphasis makes sense to me that this would be important, but I think there's minimal scaffolding in place for you to pull things you already know or things you can already sort of translate and label. I think a huge part of each new relationship with a therapist is you're essentially learning my definitions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're not just learning what kind of person I am, but you're learning when I say this pissed me off, or, and she was yelling at me, like what I mean by that.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
I get this all the time. Trish and I had an argument the other day, and it was pretty short because it was me driving her to work, which is like a mile and a half. And it stuck with me and messed up my head the rest of the day, and finally we had to like have a talk about it. But I realized while I was sort of coming to terms with this, I was like, to a bunch of other people, that wasn't even an argument. Like there was so little to that, was just a conversation, and on a couple of academic points we agreed. But I'm like, yeah, but for us that was kind of a serious argument, and it kind of had an emotional react, but you wouldn't know from the outside.
Mm.
And I think that's constantly a thing. And as somebody who tries to not be overly troublesome with my emotional state, I sometimes feel if I'm in a situation like whoever's being the most obviously explicitly emotional somehow wins for like having the hardest time in the situation or something. And honestly, I think some of this can be drawn down how we raise our children along gender lines. There's a whole bunch of guys who don't know what to do if somebody cries. There's a whole bunch of guys who think crying is cheating in an argument, and things like that, because we have been raised both the value of such a thing in our society as an emotional outburst, and whether we, depending on which track we were raised in, are allowed to express such an emotional reaction.
Crying is cheating. I don't think I've ever heard that one. That's interesting.
The one that was really playing around in the 90s, and I'm sure is still on certain parts of Reddit, is crying is emotional blackmail.
Oh my gosh. Well, that doesn't.
But that doesn't think about right. it. Think about it from the stimuli that has been applied to the person who has this viewpoint. I have been raised to believe a few things here. Crying is absolute emotional weakness and vulnerability. Specifically, that weakness. That's a big thing about it. Women are allowed to do it because they get to be frail and weak. I am not allowed if I feel like crying. Crying is not an option for me. We all know this. So if I'm having an argument with a woman and she gets to cry, she knows that's a trump card that I can't play. And she's doing it on purpose because she was raised to be able to cry really easily. And so I just have to lose because I'm not allowed to cry. Men suck. I mean, sorry, women suck. Why do men have to suffer through this? It's always hardest on the white guy. End of rant. Now, we did trail off a little on the end, but you get the idea.
I mean, I guess.
It's several different layers and sources of fucked up hegemonic gender roles that combine to look really shitty.
Well, another thing that happens to be related to that is the dichotomy we have between emotions and thinking or whatever.
Yes.
Which is absurd, and that's it's.
You need to stop being emotional and start being rational.
Yeah, it's a false dichotomy, as far as I can see, and it seems like most behavioral scientists agree with that. Even though there are a lot of like personality assessments and various things that still try to split those things up into two separate things. I just don't. I think that's a.
I blame Leonard Nimoy. Vulcans ruined it for everybody.
Because, you know, most of the time, I've noticed, maybe other people have too, when someone's saying we need to take emotion out of this and approach it this way, that the alternative way they present still has plenty of emotion in it. They're not really getting rid of any emotion. So, you know, it's really a way to sort of to bully a person into not expressing whatever it is going on with them subjectively and not dealing with the complications of that, whatever that is.
Listeners, I am nodding emphatically. It's mostly because I'm tired, but it's a little bit because I agree with William.
It's our culture tends to be dismissive of things that it perceives to be complicated and difficult by pretending that those complicated and difficult things are inferior or are primitive or it's very colonialistic,
morally suspect,
right?
Because of their complexity.
Sure. Savage. Or lower lower in terms of intelligence or sophistication, so they can just dismiss it and expect the person to be more civilized or sophisticated or whatever it is, when really that has nothing to do with it. They just don't want to deal with that, so they pretend it's inferior in some way.
You know, if you punch this up a little bit, I think we might have our new intro for the podcast.
What are you talking about?
I'm digging this. I love the idea of a podcast built entirely on complexity equals inferiority, and you have to remove your emotions. I think this could work. I think we could be huge.
Okay, I don't know what you mean, but that's fine.
Leave it up to me.
What about your week? Why don't we talk about?
Well, I want to leave emotions out of it.
Okay,
because that's inferior. See? Already working on it. We're getting there. This is nested within our existing podcast is the PR for our new podcast.
Okay.
We're going to call it Chew Heads, and I'm going to eat every episode. My week was fine. I don't know. If it's any perspective, my therapy session sounded exactly like this. She was like, how are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. Because, I mean, this is a bit of a rough year for me in general. I mean, not year, sorry. This time of year is often very difficult for me. And I've been coming to the fact that the cycles I have in my mood and my sort of brain chemistry and things aren't things I'm going to eliminate. They're just things I'm going to sort of hope to exert more influence on. So
yeah,
it just goes in patterns. So I'm like, things are going great, except the days when they aren't, in which case they go horrible. But then later they're good again. How's the exercise doing? Great, except when it's not. And then that's right. No good. But then it does again. I've been real good on my diet, except for days when I haven't, in which case I've been pretty bad. So I'm like, I mean, I guess it's fine. I don't, if you ask me in 3 days, my opinion will probably be different. So that's pretty much how everything are this week. I do have two things I want to talk about. Well, two and a half.
Okay.
One is what I did this weekend, which is, and I think I talked about how I was going to do, I went, Trish and I drove on Saturday to Chillicothe, to Illinois Valley, some, I don't know, to the high school in Chillicothe, IVC High School, for madrigals. Do you know what madrigals are?
No.
I believe a madrigal is actually a specific kind of medieval music. But that's not specifically what I think. I don't remember for sure. What it is in this case is a long-standing tradition at this high school that is sort of part play, part choir concert, part dinner theater with a sort of medieval or Renaissance era theme to it. So we buy tickets and we go, and there's a waiting area, and there's court jesters and band playing to sort of entertain us. And then eventually the royal court, which is, there's two kings and two queens, one pair is visiting the other, and the royal court all goes through, and they've done the entire common area of this high school up like an old castle keep. And then we all go in and we sit down, and there's songs, and there's sort of a through line story-wise, and then they perform little plays in the middle, and they feed us, and they sing a lot, and then the serving wenches come in and sing, and then we got a choir of orphans that come in and sing, and they, things like this. And then eventually you leave. And I had not experienced something like this before, and it was really interesting. Apparently it is an optional thing you can audition for at this school, which is probably good because it's very, very Christian. I don't know that there's any non-Christians at that school, but this is very Christian. But I had a really fun time. However, I was seated the most front row center that you can be. In this giant castle keep, I was at a round table in the center, right next to the risers and then the dais where the court was and everything. So my back was to them, for starters, if I'm sitting at the table. And if I turn it around to watch the performances, I was maybe 4 feet away from where the people were standing. At one point, one of the jesters let go of a balloon and it hit me in the face. A different time, one of the guards drew his sword and I was a few inches away from it getting at me. Like, I was in it. Which was a super cool way to see it, and also exhausting. I was not involved at all, but whatever reserve of energy that you have when you socialize that then drains over time was being drained during that. That whole thing finished, and I'm just like, I don't want to see anyone. I don't want to talk to anyone. But it was really cool and interesting and funny and the senior kids are better singers than anybody was at my high school. I was ostensibly in the various top singing groups at my high school, and neither I nor the people I was with could sing like these kids could sing. It was pretty impressive.
Nice.
It was also a small town in Illinois where almost no one was wearing masks. And we were all crowded together. Trish and I had masks. My sister-in-law and her husband had masks. We went with them. Maybe a handful of others, but not many. Anyway, we went home. Sunday night. Or no, it must have been Monday morning. Yeah, because that was when I came. Monday morning, we find out that my brother-in-law has now tested positive for COVID.
Mm.
And we're like, well, shit. We don't think he got it there. Because their children had been sick with something that wasn't COVID earlier in the week. And so he had already been feeling a little bad, but assumed it was that thing. And that was part of why he was masked up, was to spare anybody else. But somewhere he got COVID. So that's why it's been a weird mix. Everybody has COVID now. Like all over the place, all the time. So many people I know, like am one removed from, have had it lately. So many scares going on. This is my second COVID scare in like a month and a half or something. But consequently, the operating procedures for different businesses and things vary immensely. So I found out I had a COVID scare. I'm asymptomatic. These are the two important things. I decide on my own, hanging out in a public restaurant with two close friends unmasked for lunch is probably dumb. So I opt for that, to not do that.
Yeah.
The next day, I go to the hospital for my standard dietitian appointment, where there's tons of people, because I know already from my last COVID scare, which happened around a similar time, that they're like, we can't, if you don't have symptoms, just show up. Like, we're all just going to act like we're fine. If you don't have symptoms and you haven't tested positive, and we're all going to wear masks, but that's as good as we can do. Because if we take it more seriously, no one will ever get to be at the hospital. The building will be empty. No one will ever make it to an appointment because we're a damn hospital. So, scared enough to not have lunch with you, not so scared that I won't go into a crowded hospital. And then I had to drop off the United Way Adopt-A-Family stuff that we did, which, whatever, I dealt with one person. I had a mask on. That was fine. But I did it like a block from where my therapy is. And yet I had my therapy over Zoom. I went home and did that because I'm like, there's nothing different about this. It doesn't cost different. And so there's no reason to be in the same room just for shits and giggles if there's that risk. So it just felt weird, the things like I've done and haven't done this week.
Yeah.
And like I had massage therapy Wednesday and I had texted her on Monday. And she's like, everybody's got whatever. And I was like, okay. And so then Wednesday morning, I was like, yep, I still don't have any symptoms, so I'm coming. So I went to that. So who knows? I think we're fine. Neither of us have had anything. So that's good. But yeah, Madrigals was really fun, and I enjoyed it. And I really would like to know if other people have experienced something like this. I don't think my school had this. It certainly didn't have it when I was there. But it sounds like a thing my school would have done. So I don't know, but does anybody else, it's probably not called Madrigals, but has my description reminded anybody of anything? You, I'm assuming not, because you seem, I mean, that's kind of your look, but you're just like, no recognition.
When I was growing up, this high school had a big show every year, but it wasn't medieval themed. I mean, it had a lot of those elements that you're talking about. It just wasn't themed.
But was it holiday themed?
I don't remember that. It could have been, because it could have been around Christmas time when they did it or something. But I don't think so. I think it was a thing they did in the second semester, you know, so that they could rehearse and everything during the fall started through the winter. So I think it was a spring thing they did, a spring show.
Hmm.
And it had sketches and music. And I mean, it was a thing they did every year. In fact, when I was a kid, I remember thinking to myself, wow, I can't wait to do this when I get in high school. And by the time I got into high school, they didn't do it anymore. So
interesting. See, this is what I wonder. Because it feels like a thing my school would do. I'm wondering, like, did it happen? But my sister doesn't remember it either. She's like 9 years older. But I'm like, did they used to do something like this? I mean, because it's just a Christmas. Like, as a little kid, we had a Christmas pageant and crap.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, we had that too, right?
And in fact, we sang a lot of these songs that I don't think you'd want to sing in schools now, that they were singing at this. But yeah, nothing quite. I mean, one year we did Christmas Carol as a play. But yeah, in general, I mean, we certainly never fed them or anything.
No, nothing like, yeah. I mean, there were Christmas, you're right. There was Christmas programming, but it was always kids singing and the kid bands, you know, playing mm-hmm. music, but it was all music. There weren't any sketches when I was coming up, people would often ask me to do sketch type stuff. Nobody
you
else was doing
look
it.
Like somebody that can be really entertaining for like a few minutes tops and then get them out. But
I'm
like,
serious. Nobody else was ever, they didn't, as far as I know, these winter programs were just music, kids singing or playing band instruments, never any sketches, but I was asked to do sketches. Like I was asked to recite Night Before Christmas, Visit from St. Nicholas or whatever it is. I don't know why that was. We didn't have musicals in elementary school ever. The first time I remember us ever having a musical in elementary school was when I was in fifth grade and I was asked to lead it. So I don't know what I did to project to people that, hey, I'm willing to make a fool out of myself in front of hundreds of
people. This would have been
like
the 70s or the 80s?
Late. So when I was in fifth grade, I think that was 79, I want to say, or it could have been.
All right. Given the time period and the relatively small size of the community, is it possible that the adults thought you were like the town's one gay kid and these kind of jobs are like the one way they could feed into it stereotypically? They were trying to support you. They were like, this is the campiest shit we can think of. Let's give it to the one kid we're pretty sure is gay.
Maybe the gay kid part, possible. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that we want to support gayness part. I think it's more of a, who can we get to do this? Oh, he's gay. No.
I think this is better. And I don't think gay
it was
is
more
well.
Like that.
You were the fucking Mikey from Life Cereal of your entire school.
I guess. Cause see, when I think of myself as a kid and other people who knew me.
Do you see yourself as wearing a suit and bow tie? I can't not picture you like a toddler, but suit and bow tie.
You're joking, but I mean, there are pictures of me in a tuxedo.
I am not at all surprised. I resent your implication that I'm joking.
But I remember being
in the crib, spitting up on himself, still staring, wearing a nice suit and bow tie, maybe spats.
I remember being by myself and doing things by myself. Just, I didn't play with other kids on the playground or anything. And other people who were in my class have said the same thing. So I don't know what I did. Well, maybe I do. So one thing that I did do that probably made me stand out was in music class or in like for singing or playing an instrument, I was very loud. Like, you know, I didn't hold back. I was just belting it out or whatever. So I think in those contexts where all the kids are supposed to be performing, I was way overdoing it compared to all the other kids. So that's probably
going to give you your own.
Yeah. I mean, all the rest of the time I wasn't engaging with other kids. I wasn't, you know, one friend of mine said, you know, Bill, I remember seeing you on the playground and you just were walking around the outside of it all by yourself. It's like, yeah, I remember that. That's what I did.
All right.
But in music class or in any class where you were supposed to act out things, I was always like really doing it. You know, I wasn't doing it just half-heartedly or whatever. I was putting my all into it. And I guess people noticed that.
All right. I'm putting together a theory. We don't have a lot of time to delve into it, but the gist is, I think you might have been Truman Showed, but like your show went, like the ratings tanked and it got canceled like age 6 or so.
Maybe. Kindergarten, maybe.
Between
yeah.
6 and 10. Mm. And so they've just been trying to deal with the after effects of all the setup they put into you early on, while at the same time not really caring about the result, except in a basic sense of humanity, not wanting your life to be destroyed version. Were people really concerned when you decided to move away from town, or did they seem relieved?
I mean, like I said, by the time I'd gone the course and all this over 8 years, I think people just knew me as someone who, if they needed someone to do something that everybody else was too smart to want to do, someone who would get out in front of people and make an ass out of himself and not even care, I was their guy. But that didn't endear me to anybody. I mean, I don't think anybody necessarily, you know, liked me, and nobody invited me to like parties or anything like that. So I think when I left, I don't think anyone even noticed. I don't think I really
they still think you're there right now.
I was just the guy that's like, gosh, can we find someone who's stupid enough to do this? Maybe that right kid. And I was the guy. Oh, and I did do some things that I was really, one time, I don't know if I ever told you this. One time I was asked to be the master of ceremonies for a mud drag competition where they drive trucks through a big mire of mud. And of course, the objective is to get to the other side. They wanted me to be the announcer for that, which I did. And I'm sure it was terrible. I mean, I don't really remember much about it, but I mean, I didn't know anything about mud dragging, or, you know, I couldn't say anything about the vehicles because I didn't know anything about
mastering.
I emceed a lot of things and I did okay in some things, but I couldn't even recognize what make, model, and year a truck was when just by looking at it, driving up to the mud bog or whatever. I mean, I was the last person they should have asked to do it. And I was really
Yeah, but terrible. You just shout your catchphrase into the microphone and everybody would be happy.
I didn't have a catchphrase.
You
I emceed other
you
things.
Just didn't know.
I emceed other things and it was all right. If
I mean, better than your DJing for sure.
Oh my gosh, I was a terrible DJ. One night and I was done. I mean, I think they were fine. The radio station was fine because it was late at night anyway. And they knew that I could get better, which I probably could have, but I had no desire to get better. I didn't want to do it anymore. This was
and
a
like
this
that,
was
your hip hop career was ruined.
This was a radio station that was also kind of half a news station. And the news is what I wanted to do. And I think I think it was one of those deals where, like, okay, do this for a while and you can sort of work up to what you want to do. I also wanted to do like commercials, maybe write them or voice act in them or whatever, because I had some acumen in that area. But it was like, yeah, do this for a while, do the overnight DJ thing for a while and you can work up to the other thing. But I didn't,
and you
I didn't
were
like
it. No. I am a star, goddammit.
No. It wasn't like that. It was more, I was actually willing to do whatever they wanted, you know, clean the bathrooms, whatever. But this is what they wanted me to do. And I was like, okay, sure, I can do that. Just teach me how. But I disliked it so much that I thought, no, I don't want to do that. If there was something else I could have done. If there's something else I could have done, I would have done that instead to work my way up the ladder. Like, what about, you know, taking the stuff that came over the wire and editing it for the other person to read. Can I do that? I mean, isn't that a low level thing? But no, this overnight DJ gig, which nobody wanted, of course, that was the thing. And I just disliked it so, so much. I didn't think I would hate it so much, but I really did.
The man really has kept you down.
Well, I wrote for the local newspaper instead, which I actually liked quite a bit. And I wish I could have kept doing that. But my first wife, she wanted to go back to school here at the University of Iowa. So we moved back here. See, all of that was back in Knoxville, which is the county seat of Marion County. So I was technically living back home there for a few years. and I like that a lot, but eventually my wife wanted to go back to school, and so we came back here, and I've been here ever since.
Still in Jordan. All right, Grandpa, we got to take you back to the home. So, actually, I guess there is a little side jump here. Finished Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Pleased with the series.
Good.
Not pleased with all the episodes. Not especially pleased with the resolution, but in a way that I think is common. It just kind of felt like, oh, shit, we got a lot of loose ends. All right, let's just start stitching things together.
Yeah.
And a weird mix of setting things up for another season, but not setting them up as hard as I was expecting. A lot of things that actually resolved, I assumed would be sort of cliffhangers. But I guess that's because I'm living in the future and know the show has been a success. But yeah, I enjoyed it, and I'm sure I will watch a second season that I'm pretty sure will happen. So that's cool. Last night, we watched a movie. Right now is a great time for movies. By which I mean, like, literally this window of a couple weeks. Tons of shit that some of which I didn't know was in theaters yet, is already on our streaming services. Bullet Train, already on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, you can watch it now. If I'd known it was going to be out like 3 weeks later, we might not have paid money for it. But I don't regret paying money for it. I really enjoyed it. I recommend that. That weird Norwegian troll one you've already seen. That one recently came out. The documentary about the various Robert Downeys, Jr. and his father. Do you not know about this? No. Robert Downey Jr. basically got a filmmaker to make a documentary about his dad. And it's on Netflix, and apparently it's fucking amazing. Also, Robert Downey Jr.'s dad was a major edgy underground filmmaker back in the day that most people don't know about. Like, apparently it's really cool. Anyway, that's out there. Also, the Banshees of Inisherin, the Irish one with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson by the same guy who did in Bruges and all that. So we've been very excited for that one. And that's on HBO Max. Soon, Glass Onion will be on Netflix, like within a week or so. I think there's even more. But then the other one that we watched last night that we've been very excited about, didn't know when it was in theaters, but saw the trailers, was Amsterdam on HBO Max.
Yeah, you've talked about being interested in that.
Yes. And I didn't know a ton about it. It's set in the 30s. And it involves Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, and a guy I didn't really know, but it turns out it's the guy who played the main character in Tenet. And he's been in several other things. Nothing I've actually seen. But the three of them are basically best friends in the 1930s and hijinks into. And it had everybody in it. The Queen's Gambit one, Taylor Joy, is that her name? Remy Malek, Michael Shannon, Mike Myers, for some reason. Who else is that? Oh, Taylor Swift. Just Chris Rock, a bunch of people in this movie. And so we watched it last night. And there's something key that I did not put together when I originally saw the trailers. It was written and directed by David O. Russell. You know David O. Russell?
I don't think so.
You probably have seen a lot of things he's done. He is best known for Three Kings, I Heart Huckabees, Silver Linings Playbook. He does a lot. He likes to be surreal. It's not quite Wes Anderson level, but there's a sort of surrealness to it.
Now that you've mentioned what he's worked on, I know who you're talking.
Yeah. And stuff that I have loved. I Heart Huckabees was my favorite film for many, many, many years.
Mine too. I really loved it.
I haven't watched it recently. I feel like aspects of it wouldn't have aged as well. I feel like my general life philosophy has grown more nuanced since then, for lack of a better term. But I still like it.
The same, yeah.
And consequently, this movie, all I kept saying as we were watching it, like 6 or 7 times, I just turned to Trish and I was like, this is a weird movie. And it is a weird movie. It's a fun movie. It's entertaining. It's got a story that makes sense, but it's just very sort of surreal in a way that, like if you're watching Wes Anderson, everything looks like a goddamn, you know, Thomas Kincaid painting or whatever. So like, it's surreal and you understand it's surreal. You're looking at a set that looks kind of overly done. And the people are in slightly odd costumes and the colors are strange and stuff.
And, there's a narrative aesthetic that goes with the visual aesthetic.
Yes.
It all works. Yeah.
This is much more dissonant. And I'm not saying it doesn't work, but I'm seeing what sort of looks like just normal people. And it's a normal, like it seems like it's going to be sort of a drama or whatever, but then it has this weird heightened reality and certain scenes of the dialogue feels different than others. And it plays with that shit that sometimes, not often, but every once in a while, something happens. And then it turns out that was just some character was imagining that. And that's not what occurred and things like that. So it's very odd, but it's a fun time. It also is, as it goes on, it's set in the 1930s. As it goes on, the veneer, the cloudy glass between you and the realization that this movie that comes out now is actually talking a whole lot about the current political climate, despite the fact that it is at least partially based off of actual historical things that happened in the 30s. That glass gets thinner and thinner, and it becomes the veneer gets more and more transparent. And by the end, you're like, I get it. So-and-so is supposed to be this politician. And so-and-so's, yes, I understand. Thank you for making the morality tale as clear as possible near the end. And so that was a little precious. But the characters are fascinating. The performances are unbelievable all around. I have never seen Kristen Bale like this. I have never seen Margot Robbie like this. I have kind of seen Rami Malek like this. Mike Myers, I mean, it didn't give him a hard part to do, but it's like a serious, it's not a funny part at all, and he does great.
And the actor from Tenet was who?
I don't remember his name, but he's one of the three leads. He's another one of those guys that has three names, and I don't remember what they are. One of them might be Gibson. I don't know.
It wasn't Robert Pattinson then.
No. Sorry. I can see him in my head. Literally, I believe he's identified as the protagonist in Tenet. That's his name. Flash.
Oh,
so he's definitely not Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, but he's the son of... Dang it.
Mm. He's Robert Pattinson's son? Wow.
No,
even more complicated than I realized.
The guy you're talking about is the son of a famous black actor.
You've got like 4 monitors in front of you. Look it up.
No, I just have one. Because Abby set her office up in here now and she took those monitors.
Mess.
He's the son of...
Careful.
I don't remember his first name, but I can't believe I don't remember. There's so many.
I think it's racism.
No, I've had memory problems. Well, all my life, but lately they've been pretty.
John David Washington.
Yeah. He's
is he Denzel's son?
Denzel's son. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you can.
Well, he did a very good job.
When you know that, you notice it after. If you watch the movie again, you'd go, Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is Denzel Washington's kid.
See, something about the smile he has reminded me of Chris Redd, who's absolutely nothing like, of course. He also used to play professional football, apparently.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yep, Denzel's... I couldn't remember the name Denzel Washington. Isn't that stupid? I mean, he's one of the most famous people in the world. Ashamed.
Again, I think it's racism.
It's not.
but anyway, I would recommend it. I would recommend it. It's just weird. But I liked it. And yeah, it's your chance to see some real good scenery chewing in some real interesting ways from some of your favorite peoples. Zoe Saldana is also in it. I apologize to actors that I forget who I know. A lot of big name actors listen to our podcast, and so I apologize if I'm forgetting you in this. But yeah, so saw that. But we got a bunch more coming, and we'll see. Have you seen any new stuff lately? There's been stuff coming out.
I mean, you know, we've been watching like Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
Like stuff we watch every Christmas. Well, we've been watching some of that stuff. And we have, you know, we did see Spirited or whatever, and we saw, I mean, we have been watching.
I'm some real new- curious. The new Willow just started, and I'm curious about that because I'm a big fan of the original.
Yeah, I think I'd like to watch the original again since it's been so long.
Which is, it's also out there on Disney Plus. So.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll, I mean, we've been thinking about watching the new one because.
Also, William Gibson, The Peripheral on Amazon.
We've been watching that.
I think
all
of its episodes are out, so I think we may check that out soon.
Yeah, it started out pretty good, and then, I mean, it's not bad. Warwick Davis, I like him a lot. As an actor, but you know, when I see him doing things as himself, he seems like such a nice guy, and he's talented.
Warwick seems very cool.
Very talented guy. So I definitely want to support whatever he's doing. You know, it almost doesn't matter if it's all that great. I just, you know, want to.
And they brought back a surprising number of the original cast. Obviously not Val Kilmer, but his wife, who was his love interest on Willow, and apparently that's where they met and they got married. She's there.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure at least Kevin Pollak, if not the other guy, reprised their role as the Brownies. Like, it's a whole thing. And that actress who played the head of the Flag Smashers in Falcon and Winter Soldier and also played the originator of the rebellion in Solo, A Star Wars Story, she's in it. She's a young, hot property right now. I don't remember her name.
Well, whatever the case, I know Warwick Davis is going to do a great job. I know it's going to be fun to watch him do his thing.
It's Warwick. You sound like such a Yankee. It's pronounced Warwick. Warwick Davis.
Sorry. Anywho.
Well, we actually have some emails now, but we are out of time. And I squarely put that at William and his just some textbook onion belting you did today. So I got to say, it's probably worth it. Y'all have to tell me in the comments if you would rather have heard an email, but I kind of enjoyed watching William fall back into his own nostalgia in sort of a reverse version of Get Out, where old people like just sort of, you know. You did a good job, Grandpa. You made my internet show real good. Thank you. Thank you for helping.
You're welcome, Sonny.
Now, can you get Alex to hit the button? Is she there? She was supposed to be with you this afternoon.
To help me out?
Who made your lunch? Have you eaten?
You're terrible.
Apparently, this isn't even meant to be a joke, but there's so much upheaval in the UK Parliament right now that apparently at the moment, dementia patients, when they have to get asked the series of questions, they do not ask who is the current Prime Minister.
Apparently any normal person might not know the answer.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going to lie. I did hear that on The Last Leg, which is not a place you go for actual news. But they specified at the time, this is a real thing that's happening. So,
well, it's a joke. It's a joke, the whole, do you know what year it is and do you know who the president is? But, I mean, that is a thing that therapists or mental health
professionals
do ask.
Because it's a nice, simple, common knowledge thing. But right now, anyway, sorry we didn't get to any questions. Next week, who knows? We'll be talking holiday stuff more, so who knows? But anyway, you all have a great time now. And go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and keep things hip and young. I got this old guy dragging me down here. Come on, we got to even it out. Help us hit all four quadrants, baby! I genuinely couldn't name a single one of those. Anyway, also, go to aethertheater.com, although apparently just go to Aether Theater on Facebook, because nobody cares about the website anymore, to check out the Wisp thing, because the Wisp thing is cool. Also, starting today and going till the end of the year, the calendar year, Oddwings, my book over on Smashwords, is once again free. So money's tight right now. $3 doesn't go as far as it used to. That's fine. Go get it for free. If you've been waiting, stop waiting. Do it right now, because we're about to end this, so you got nothing else going on. So yeah, do that. And listen next week, and have a good survivable holiday time. We love you, Chew Heads.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.